true story that needs to be told about a group of good old boys from the South finding their way through their unique spiritual journey in the 1980s. Petey and JJ, the main protagonist of these stories, are accompanied on their escapades by Gyro, a psychedelic engineer from California, and Sugar Bear, a civil rights activist and Vietnam protester. The group of young entrepreneurs made their way by utilizing their individual skill sets, coming together as a team to become the All-American Pot Smugglers, importing medicinal marijuana into the United States in order to help fund green technologies for the planet. Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And no one knows this better than this group of All-American Pot Smugglers. From poor flying conditions, faulty instrumentation, to unexpected eyewitnesses, these guys have seen it all. They learned very quickly that in order to pull off these runs successfully with their lives intact and their hides out of jail, things had to be planned all the way down to the smallest detail. Even Murphy himself knew that in order to avoid catastrophe, you had to attempt to eliminate every variable possible. And when you don't, well, we've got some stories to tell you of how not to do a smuggling run.
Yeah, and I tell you, we pulled off a lot of them, but there's a lot of them that didn't go right.
Other people that didn't plan as well as you guys, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And one of them I remember the Tamiami trip?
Oh, yeah, I do remember you guys talking about that one.
That's a Tamiami. Where is that, Pete? Around
That's in right south of Miami, southern part of Miami.
Okay.
Is that one of the main Miami airports, or is
it? Well, Miami International.
Right.
Then north is Opa-locka, Tamiami is south.
Okay.
South Miami.
Yeah.
But from what I remember, that's not where any of this was supposed to take place, right?
That's right. No, that's right.
Because you guys y'all were up in Alabama, right?
Yeah. Me and Bear, well, we went up to, we were hired by this Alabama guys to unload the plane up there in a cornfield up there in Alabama.
Be the ground crew.
Be the ground crew.
Catch a load.
And this is kind of what happens when you don't control the narrative when you're working for other people.
Right.
And so our job was just to, we drove an old Cadillac Seville up there, really nice old car, had a huge trunk. And
good for pot smuggling.
Great for pot smuggling.
And you met up with this guy that was introduced to me. His name was Bubba Hardin.
Right. Bubba Hardin, they called him Hard On.
Bubba with the hard on.
Bubba with the hard on.
Yeah, poor kid.
He knew everybody. Yeah. He was a funny guy. He kind of redneck, but he was a good old guy.
Now, yeah. Were y'all going to be able to fit the whole load in just that one trunk, or did y'all have multiple vehicles up there?
They had a truck up there, too.
Oh, okay.
They had another truck up there, and
split the load up a little bit.
Yeah, they're going to split the load up. And
so y'all were up there doing reconnaissance, and you said it was Eufaula, right? Eufaula, Alabama.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so y'all were kind of checking the place out the day before, getting the lights all set up and waiting for a plane to come in.
Waiting for it to come in.
Yeah, Eufaula was a real garden spot, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So they were up there, and I was down in Miami chilling out. Gyro was down there working on his
perpetual stuff that Gyro
motion,
works on.
All this wild stuff and everything. And all of a sudden, I get this call, and it's Crow. He was the co-pilot on he said, man, we ran into a thunderstorm and got disoriented, so we put the airplane down in Tamiami Airport.
Oh,
yeah, we're sitting up there in the field.
Waiting
for them to get there. And
waiting like this.
And all of a sudden, I get this call, and I'm scurrying around going wild trying to get the van and get Gyro and Linda and head down that way. And I get this call from JJ.
Yeah, I was like, hey, man, we're kind of worried about these dudes. Have you heard anything? And he's like... He's like, oh, man, I can't talk now. I got to run.
I'm a little busy.
Yeah.
Hit the fan down here.
They are here.
Yeah, they're here.
I don't know what we're going to do.
Oh, no. So,
anyway, we get in the van, go down there and everything, and We pull by going toward the gate, and all of a sudden these guys jump out of the woods and flag us down, you know, and there's Crow and the pilot. And they jump in the van and everything. They're all freaked out. Yeah.
And didn't they just they just landed and they taxied over to where they're supposed to park.
Right.
Tied the plane down, I think, wasn't it?
Everything was going along real good.
And they were sitting in the plane.
Yeah, just sitting around.
Waiting trying to figure out what to do next, of course.
Right. Right.
and then the chopper flew right over them, right? Wasn't it, Pete?
Freaked them out. Freaked them out. So they jump out. And Crow, man, he's kind of lame. So he left the door wide open, and the guard
Oh man!
And here comes the guard. He comes around and everything, sees this airplane tied down, the door wide open, gets his light out, shines in there, bales of marijuana.
He's just going to go over there, you know, and close the door for the people.
Yeah, I know it.
Smuggling 101, close the plane door, especially if you've landed somewhere you're not supposed to.
Come on, man.
If you get that close to a plane with an open door, the smells are going to be overwhelming.
You wouldn't even need to look.
right.
Yeah, you don't even have to look.
This guy knew from 100 feet away. Uh-oh.
So they jump in the van, and I say, you think we can retrieve the load? Oh, yeah. I mean, with planes all tied down, we're good. So we pull up to the gate, and all of a sudden, we're surrounded by law enforcement, you know. And we're like, oh, my God.
Well, because they're probably waiting for whoever's load it is to come back and pick it up, too. So that's probably why there was so much law enforcement there.
Exactly.
So you guys had to play it off.
Well, we just came from a party, and we're pretty drunk, and we just ended up here, and we got to get on back to the party, and so they didn't know what to do. They're sitting around there, you know, scratching their head, scratching their butt.
Well, down there in that part of the country, those security guys were probably thinking, should we turn this in, or should we just take the load?
Can you all stay quiet for?
Should we just split this up with us, or should we turn it in?
And eventually, that's exactly what happened. They just took the load, the airplane, and everything else. Well, we'll get to that. Finish that story up.
Yeah, because that was the one, I think, because when you mentioned Crow, I was like, oh, this was one of my favorite stories, or one of the times that by the skin of your teeth. I remember when you guys got surrounded by the law enforcement, and you'd said, we're going off to a party, they said, or we just came from a party.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, we'll get out of here, you drunkards. And then what is it? Crow leans forward and starts whispering to you, hey, Petey, I got to go get my jacket out of the plane.
I know it. And the guard was right there, and he said, what did you say?
What did he just say?
I said,
oh, nothing, sir.
No, he's
been partying too much.
He's drunk, and he's stoned, and he's out of it, you know.
Oh, man.
You know, so I turned around to Gyro, and I said, man, you got to get a banana stick in his mouth. We got to squat this guy down. He's about to really get us.
That's why you probably called him Crow. He's out there squawking, about to get you guys caught.
Right. About getting his jacket out of the plane, which really would have doomed us. So anyway, they didn't have anything on us, and so we get in the van, and we take off, and they allowed us to head on back to the party.
So y'all just had to abandon the plane and the load and everything.
Oh yeah. I mean, and that was when we were first getting going. That was a hard one to swallow.
Me and Bear, we went ahead and just checked into a hotel room that night, and then The next day, we motored back down to Florida, and I don't know, a few days later, we ended up back down there, and there was a hangar down there.
Yeah, the mechanics that always would debug our planes before we'd ever do a run.
This was there at Tamiami.
Okay. Yeah, we had another airplane we could use, so we were sitting in the hangar, getting ready to go and everything, figuring all the logistics out on how to, because we were hurting. I mean, we'd lost a plane, load, and everything else, and all of a sudden, Gyro had done that door on that airplane that they took.
Yep.
And about two or three hangars down, the DEA was they had that plane out there, man, and they had police around there, and they were like, God, look at this door, man. This is really cool.
They were admiring Gyro's work.
We heard of some California cat that had done all this work, and this they were parading it up and down and up and down, and they were doing
seminars on the how the plane was rigged
right.
up.
Right, they were impressed.
And, you know, Sugar Bear, man, he would do the plumbing on them. And he would set up the auxiliary tanks and things like that. So they were, you know, checking all that out too. So
yes,
wow.
And then I was like, oh, it get really, really got me upset. And I was like ready to go out there. I want my plane back on my loads.
We had to hold him down, man. I had to keep him from going out there and giving us all up.
That was your pride and joy plane right there. That was your money maker.
Give it back to me. Give me that damn plane back. And don't y'all go sell the pot that we brought in.
Yeah.
Of course, I think they did.
Oh, I know they did.
Yeah, that's
they,
the way.
They definitely made money on that.
Yeah, I remember seeing a guy come up that was one of the guys that we sold to that I'd recognize. Oh, yeah, now you're going to sell the product for them.
Yeah, a whole catastrophe can happen, you know, like a thunderstorm popping up.
And that's Murphy's Law, just throw you completely off course like that. There are some things you can plan for, though, and I think you guys have told me some stories about miscalculations of fuel. JJ, didn't you have one about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was this dude that I met, you know, along the way that he was a pilot for another group, Old Chief. We call him Chief. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered about Old Chief. I always thought maybe he was a double agent or something, but that's another story.
Okay.
But, yeah, when you get down to it, man, you got to have enough fuel to make it down there and back one way or another, and they had calculated just a little wrong, and they ended up ditching their plane in the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they, you know, and the way he put the thing down was he would he ran out of gas. He was, I think, what, 5 miles off the coast of Florida?
I think, something like that, 5 or 10, something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
How deep is it out there, miles off the coast?
Yeah, that's the wonderful thing about the Gulf of Mexico, man, is basically rule of thumb is for every mile you go out on the Gulf of Mexico, the depth of the water increases about a foot.
That's right.
So you're about 10 feet deep, 10 miles off the coast.
Wow, that's hard to believe. It's so shallow.
Yeah. Yeah,
and here he's chugging along, and he just runs out of gas. So what he did is he glided down, got right over the water, and pulled his nose up and just stalled that airplane, and it just whoosh right on into the water.
Yeah, and evidently when they hit, it threw Chief up against the yoke on his steering wheel.
Oh, uh-huh.
The dude that was the co-pilot, it knocked Chief out.
Wow.
And the plane was going under.
Yeah.
Sinking,
You know? Probably pretty quick too.
Very quick. You know, that motor.
Well,
that going
didn't
down
totally sink because it had all that pot that was kept it buoyant.
Pot kept it floating. And
thank God for the pot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but what happened was the co-pilot actually had to pull Chief out of that plane, man, and he pulled him around. He was knocked out.
Yeah,
and he pulled him around, and the way the plane settled was, of course, the engine was really heavy.
Right,
and so the plane settled on its nose.
Oh, going nose down, right?
Yeah, and the tail section was the only thing that was sticking out of the water.
Mm. Oh, my God.
And so this guy pulled Chief around there, and this dude literally wrapped his legs around Chief's under his arms and held on to the tail section of that plane. And they were just very, very, very lucky, man, that some fishermen came by later on and saw the tail section, and came over to investigate and found them, or else they would have been in big trouble.
Yeah.
And gave them a ride back into shore. And, they called Goofy Ben, and they slipped away another one. But there goes another airplane and another load. That's what can happen, though.
Yeah. And I know that was that. I think you had told me before that a lot of those people didn't even miscalculate fuel. Some of them just got greedy, that they wanted to get a little more of the load in there. And so they calculated a little less fuel.
Yep.
And that's why they probably crashed just 5 miles off the coast.
I think that might have been the case here, you know.
Yeah.
They just.
We'd always, the margin was, it definitely was slim. So we'd always at least try to figure out either drop or landing that we had 15, maybe 20 minutes at the most of fuel. And the rest of the load was marijuana.
Tell us a little bit more about the calculations that you had to do. Because I know for the All-American Pot Smugglers, one of the reasons y'all were so successful is that PD was very good at making these calculations and figuring out exactly how far you could get on certain things. Tell us a little bit about that, PD.
Well, when you calculate the weight of fuel, 6-point-something pounds per gallon, and then, for instance, you want to have 10 gallons left over or 15 gallons left over, multiply that 10 times 6.7, that's 70, close to 100 pounds a pot.
Right.
And that's a lot, $250 a pound minimum. So the greed factor can't come in there and influence your decisions if you're going to be successful.
Or you end up like Chief in the drink.
Yeah. I think Chief ended up going back to the tribe.
He had his tribe go back, and he was the chief of it. So that's I think he retired.
He went back to the tribe. But they say that baseball is a game of inches, and I tell you what, smuggling is I would have to say is a game of inches too, because how many times we survived by just inches.
Well, and it has to do, y'all did survive because of things like Petey's calculations, and then I think you had Sugar Bear, who was doing all, Sugar Bear was the mechanic for everything, but before every run, if I'm not mistaken, he was in there checking every single engine, every oil pressure. I mean, tell us a little bit about that, what that was like, Bear.
Right. I had a garage at my house, and we would, I'd go through the cars to make sure if there's any thing that needed to be replaced. We took care, we kind of nipped things in the bud. We took care of it before it was going to let us down on the road.
Right. You don't want a trunk full of pot and a broken down car on the side of the road. Right. And cop pulls up and says, "Hey, can I help you?"
Right. Yeah. And thankfully, we never had a breakdown on the road. And the car's always made it back.
Tail lights, headlights, turn signals. Everything had to work. And those were like Murphy's Laws, like you were talking about.
Right. Every variable.
I worked as a truck mechanic in New Hampshire, and we did state inspections. And so I knew what to look for with a vehicle to make sure that it would pass an inspection. And,
That was not my expertise at all. I had to just focus on flying the airplane or catching the load, and JJ had to be the co-pilot or the ground crew. So everybody had their focus that they had to focus in on.
And that's what made it work. Daytona Beach Junior College, and knew guys that had gone to Emory Riddle, and I got familiar with airplanes in a small airport with these friends of mine, because Emory Riddle was a flying institute.
Yeah,
and
very good one.
You could become an aircraft mechanic, or you could learn to fly all the way up to commercial jets.
Yeah,
and it just happened to be in the same town that I was going to school in, and these guys, were looking for dates, and so we would hook them up with some of the college co-eds, and that's how we became friends.
Yeah. Well, JJ, you had a little bit of Murphy's Law prep work with the rental car companies, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What I would do is, that's one of my jobs was the mover, and I would cruise, what I would do, get rental cars. I would take a get a rental car, and what I would do is I would cruise the rental car parking lots, and I would look for cars that had been turned in that were like from Wisconsin or Minnesota,
far away places,
Missouri,
right?
Someplace, Kansas. Well, because we knew that, especially moving product up the East Coast, you go through New Jersey or New York, those cops up there would sit around looking for people coming up with Florida tags.
From Florida, right.
That's right.
They would literally pull you off.
Florida.
They'd pull you over.
Exactly.
I mean, there was places up there where they would definitely pull you over if you had Florida tags on.
All the detail.
Planning for every variable possible.
That's right.
Yeah, Virginia was especially bad. They had the state police right at the state line watching all the cars that came into Virginia.
So in the All-American Pot Smugglers, it sounds like everyone had their specialties, everyone had their jobs, and it was to to prepare for the Murphy's Law, and you guys were very successful at it. But I know you have some more stories about other crews that didn't do so well with that. What was the one that was the crash of the 402?
Oh, yeah. That was one I set up with old Ben, and he was going to load these guys up, and I met them there in Gainesville, and they had a beautiful 402 Cessna twin engine, and I think they had leased it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, those airplanes carry about 1,500 pounds. They were strong.
Oh, man, it was a beauty. Mm-hmm. But these two guys that were in it were they were looked like hog farmers, big old burly dudes. Big burly dudes.
Yeah.
And I
bad
just,
fucks.
And they were cocky. They were cocky and they were, confident and strutting around there. And we
can do this stuff.
Oh, yeah. And I looked in the rear there, and they had two big old coolers full of beer, ice and beer back there. And I'm thinking, oh, damn, these guys ain't going to make it.
Sounds like their confidence was actually just liquid courage, and maybe that's the only reason they were so confident. They were drunk already.
Overconfidence. Yeah. With beer
either that or they were doing a little of that white stuff, maybe.
Oh, Lordy.
And but they, anyhow, I could tell, man, that these dudes, they just weren't serious. I mean, they were serious, but they weren't serious. And they had, they just flipping the coin.
They weren't planning for the variables.
They had no idea about Murphy's Law or variables.
They'll find out quick.
They found out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they we sent them off down there to Belize, down around, I think, Belmopan.
Okay.
Where it was. Mm-hmm. And it was a hot day down there. And, when you get really hot temperatures and you're back in the jungle where there's not much breeze, and an airplane flies with lift.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
You have to have what they call lift.
Got to have lift,
And so you have to have more lift than the weight that you're lifting.
Mm.
There has to be, you have to have enough thrust.
You got to know your airplane.
You got to know the airplane. You got to know the load.
You got to know the length of the runway.
Yep.
And what's in front of you.
And the conditions.
More things that the pot smugglers planned for that these guys did not.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And
And they had a plane full of beer.
They had two coolers full of beer.
God.
Not just one, two. I don't know why in the hell they had two coolers of beer.
And must have weighed 300 pounds apiece, too. So it
was the big old coolers.
No, like I'm talking about the guys.
Oh, yeah.
They were fat folks.
Yeah, they were about 300s.
So what happened?
About 250s.
What happened when they tried to take off?
Well, they tried to rotate, what they call rotation, where the plane actually accomplishes liftoff, and they got maybe a couple feet off the ground, and that was it, man. The plane would not lift off, and they ran out. there's a point of no return, right, Pete?
Right, point of no return.
You got to know.
You got to know when to shut it down or keep going.
And I got to either shut it down and stop it right now or go. One of the two.
And their judgment was such that they just kept on going until they just plowed right into those in the jungle.
Right.
It hurt them bad.
Yeah, they got pretty stowed up and cut up, gashed up. Of course, it just destroyed that 402, man, tore the wing off of it.
Yeah, and they were lucky it didn't catch on fire. But so Ben calls me up and he said, these guys are beat up pretty bad down there. You need to come on and get them, you know, because they need some medical care.
Right.
And, you know, I had Lance. So, you know, next morning I jump into Lance and I boogie on across the Gulf. And luckily Sugar Bear had set everything up. We had enough fuel and everything and made it on down, got down there, landed on the road. It was thatch huts on both sides of the road, and chickens and dogs and all that, you know, just the regular Belizean jungles. And walk over there, and they had them in one of the huts and everything. And there's two fat fucks laying over there, you know, on the couch. And, they were hurting. Oh, my God. And one of them was, I think, 220, and another about 260. And they were like, oh, my God, you fat fucks. Why in the world? Now I got to load you up in this airplane and get you back to get medical help. And obviously we can't put, you know, there's no way I'm put 1,000 pounds in this thing, 500 maximum, and get off
of the load of the pot.
Of the pot, yeah, because I wasn't going to overload it in the same situation that they're in.
No, we're
going to get out of here, and so
that's right. You know, and then you know, we had to make a kind of a quick decision too, where you're going to come back into.
That's right, because we didn't have time to.
We didn't have time to pick out a spot, so we had to find some place that we knew that Pete could come in, and we could unload them. And we didn't know for sure if he was going to bring product back or not.
Right,
and
right.
So,
We had to pay for. We had to pay for some. So I said, okay, put 500 pounds in there. They were like. 480 pounds, I think, close to 500 pounds.
Close to
500.
And they were laid back there, and they were laid back on the pot. I said, "No beer, guys. You know, we're heading back. We're heading back across the
Gulf.
Beer
stays in Belize.
Right. That's right, man.
The guys will love to.
Here's
drink
you some
beer.
Sandwich bags if you need them.
Right.
So, where did you guys end up having to land when you got back to the States?
Well, we just had to risk it and go up right into that little Williston airport at night, you know, and just hope
that
there was nobody going to be around at that time. And, you know, that's one of those airports you could key your mic and turn the lights on. And I got in touch with JJ and Sugar Bear and said,
"We were waiting,
you know,
we're
coming. Make sure you got a car. Because we got to get those guys into Shands Hospital pronto, and make sure you got two cars." And I think Sugar Bear picked me and the product up, and we headed to the stash house.
And I hauled their ass over to Shands. And I tell you what, I told the guys on the way over there, I said, "You boys better come up with a damn good story, because, the poopy's going to hit the fan when they see you guys, because by then they were swollen up, black and blue, scabbed up, and they look bad."
Yeah.
And so we came up kind of a sketchy story of them out hunting. We use hunting stories a couple of times.
That excuse a lot.
There's another
three-wheelers, right?
There's another story coming up one of these days that we'll tell about another hunting accident that we had.
Oh, Lord.
But this one, the guy said, I said, you got to come up with a hunting accident. And then I pulled up and front of the emergency room there and booted their ass out and got out of there. I didn't want to stick around to answer any questions.
We took the product over, weighed it all up, and you know, we'd always cover the people, so we had a lot of medical bills we had to pay for them.
And
then we had the gas, and then so it was kind of like a maybe a break even situations. So that's what happens. Murphy can get you.
Yes, he can. Yeah. Absolutely. And especially if you're flying anywhere in or around the Everglades, from what you guys tell me, that area is a little bit like the Bermuda Triangle JJ says.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, you know, you've got roads out there that have no markers, hardly any markers, but for some reason, the radios don't work out there. You know, it's got some kind of heebie-jeebie curse on it, like a Bermuda Triangle sort of.
Right. Yeah, the altimeter and the instruments get a little off, and the people get disoriented, and it's just we got a few stories about people landing in that area.
Well, since we're talking about the Everglades, I know that we have Dewey on the phone here with us. But Pete, do you want to give a little introduction to who Dewey is and what he's going to be talking about with us here today?
Yeah, sure. Dewey was good friend, and he was Gyro's good friend, and but they wanted to jump out there and do one on their own, and we didn't really know about it. You know, they're okay. We're gonna, you know. So they set up with Goofy Ben to bring a load into the Everglades area that we were just talking about. And they all of a sudden, he told me this story about this thing. And, you know, I didn't get the story exactly right, but something about the Belizean pilot couldn't find him. And he landed and he torched the airplane. I don't know, but we want to introduce Dewey. We got him on the phone here, and we want to let him tell the story about it.
And Dewey, you know, he worked on the ground crew with us on times to time.
Several times,
yeah,
right.
You know, so we knew Dewey, and we really liked Dewey. He was a good guy, very good guy. And so we were kind of surprised at this. But the common denominator to a lot of ill-fated runs is old Ben.
Yeah,
right. I know.
I mean, you look at it, man. He was kind of like a moving Bermuda Triangle.
Right. The golf course.
And then you combined Ben with the Everglades, and boy, nothing could go right
and
there.
Gyro and Dewey and Linda.
Yeah,
boy, that's a good story.
It was like a comedy of errors. Anytime old Ben, it was something else, man. But yeah, let's hear what old Dewey's got to say. It's pretty funny.
All right, we got Dewey on the line here. Now, Dewey, everyone here in the studio knows your version of the story secondhand told, but we'd like to hear it specifically from you about what happened. So give us a little bit about what happened that time in the Everglades.
Well, what happened was we were on the correct road, and we had lights. This was at night, or, you know, going towards dusk, and we had lights set up on, I don't know what it was, maybe a quarter of a mile apart from each other to where to show the pilot where to land.
Correct.
And he flew over us a number of times and for some reason would not land.
Gotcha.
He ended up landing on a road like perpendicular to the road we were on, but about a couple miles away. I mean, the road was a long road.
So he missed. He missed you. Quite a bit. Okay,
go ahead. For some reason, and we couldn't connect on the radios. We didn't know why he wasn't landing. And he ended up landing on that perpendicular road, a busier road. Mm-hmm. And I told Gyro, I said, hey, man, he landed over there. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't sure about it. And I was like, he definitely landed over there. So
Gyro,
there was definitely miscommunication on, you know, how we were supposed to hook up with the pilot.
Gotcha. Yeah, Gyro, he didn't quite listen. He was on a different plane most of the time.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So what happened after he landed on the road over there?
Well, we continued to hang out, and we had our chairs out and our fishing poles and, you know, on the side of the street. And
so y'all were out there playing like you were fishing guys.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was
cool.
The story. We had a truck and, you know, with a camper on it, and we were out fishing, and that was our story. So after a while, we start to see a fire in the distance. We're like, what the hell? You know, we're on there. There's a big, you know, like a ball of fire, you know, like a couple miles away on that perpendicular road. We don't know what's going on. And then maybe 15, 20 minutes after that, a fire truck comes and passes us on the road, and we're out in the middle of nowhere. And this is like, we're like starting like, holy shit, what is going on here?
Mosquitoes.
So we pack up and start driving down that road toward the fire, actually. Because that was the way to get out of there.
Yes.
And we made a left, and we went down another mile or so, and we saw a bunch of lights and cars and trucks on the road. And we're like, holy shit. And we had radios to communicate with the pilot, and I started to throw them out into the weeds on the side of the road to get rid of any type of, you know, connection to that pilot.
Right, right, yeah.
Because they were specific radios to talk to, you know, a plane and a pilot, what have you.
Right.
And we rolled up to these, this basically roadblock, and we started to get questioned, and there was...
Lawman.
There was a lot of lawman. There was everything you can think of. DEA, sheriff, local police, everything you can think of. And there was guys with long guns and automatic weapons and very intimidating. And on the side of the road was all these bales. And they started to question us. And we had, I can't remember, but maybe 8 or 10 5-gallon containers of avgas, aviation fuel, to refuel the plane.
Right.
And they were very curious about that because we're, you know, we just told them we were out fishing. And they didn't really buy that once they saw all this avgas. And we told them, look, we were waiting to hook up with a friend of ours that had an airboat, which was a legitimate, you know, legitimate excuse for that avgas.
Good story.
They weren't buying it, and then eventually, basically, they told us, well, we're under arrest and whatnot. And
now, what happened?
We were out there long enough where I told one of these guys with an automatic weapon, I said, hey, I really got to use the bathroom.
You got to take a leak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said, yeah, just go on the side of the road there, but, you know, I would like for you to get in your head to start taking off running into those Everglades, and because I'll be happy to mow you down, he told me.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And we were just pot smugglers, man. We weren't evil, nasty people, you know.
Right, right.
That's pretty much the story. And the pilot, he landed where I thought he landed, and thank God we didn't go over at the time, because we may have been met with cops at the time. He kicked the load out, and then basically he was out of gas, so he got the plane down the road as far as he could get it away from the load and set it on fire, because he didn't want any type of connection to that plane with him, his fingerprints and whatnot. And then he took off into the Everglades. How he got out of there, I have no idea. I mean, he must have just got eaten alive by mosquitoes, and I mean, he literally went through the Everglades to get out of there.
And he connected back up with Ben later, and they got him back down to Belize.
I don't know any more than what I heard about why he set the plane on fire and all that, because he didn't want any connection to his fingerprints and whatnot.
Well, they arrested you guys and put you in the clink, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
how was you treated?
Well, I was treated okay, but... It was a very interesting time there. I mean, I only spent like 4 days there because my sister eventually put her house up and bailed me out. Gyro, and he ended up spending like 30 days or something. And finally they let him out because there was no real connection between with us and the pod at all. Linda, they let out right away. For some reason, they liked her, and they just let her out.
You told me that they treated her like a queen. And
treated her really well. They treated us like, you know, a little bit like... They were very curious on us. There was actually another pilot that they busted that was in the jail at the same time, and they wanted to try to put us, you know, a connection with this other guy, and they found out that there was no connection, but they treated you like an old
pot smuggler, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was a very interesting time, that's for sure.
Okay. Interesting story. We had
definitely,
it wrong.
Definitely ill-fated run. That really works into the program, I tell you.
Okay. All right. Well, good, good. Now, there's another one that we had that Bermuda Bend was involved in.
Yeah,
in that same, and that same area that I think the pilot ran into a grader.
Yeah. Yeah, it was this dude named Cuba John. Cuba John, you know, he flew for us a few times.
He was a great pilot.
But he was a great pilot.
Ugly.
He was a chain smoker, and he always freaked me out because, you know, we had about 50 gallons of plane fuel in the plane.
Right.
But I could not keep him from smoking damn cigarettes.
And you had to ride co-pilot with him every now and then?
I was the right seat co-pilot with him.
Oh, no.
On a few occasions, yes.
Blow you out of the sky.
Yeah.
But I was not in on this one, but we know about it, and it was Ben was behind this one, of course, and Ben was doing the ground crew, if I remember correctly, and Cuba John was coming in, and he had some young dude, some kid from Bailey's that was his right seat co-pilot.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, there was making sandwiches and, you know, drinks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben was supposed to meet him, you know, at a certain place. And I don't know, like, it's really true that when you get down to Everglades, you know, back then we had what we called a Loran Sea, and it was a type of navigation that was developed in World War II.
Okay.
And they triangulated three radio signals, and this Loran Sea would pinpoint where you were.
Huh, okay.
And pinpoint where the ground crew is,
right.
So you could zoom into that particular point.
Exactly.
Old school GPS before GPS.
Before right. GPS.
That's right.
And it was, I really liked that Loran Sea. It was hard to work, especially if one of the radio's transmitters was off frequency, was offline.
Yeah.
You had to have three to triangulate. But anyhow, as usual, Ben was, he was at the wrong place.
Again.
Remember that?
Yeah, again.
So Cuba John was circling around out there and circling around. And, of course, he got in there late.
Yeah, dark.
It was dark.
At that time.
Mm-hmm. Out there in the Everglades, man.
And you don't see anything.
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, it's pitch black down there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you might see somebody's house lights way off here and some house lights way off there. But he had the coordinates where he was supposed to be. And he kept circling around there waiting for Ben to turn on his lights. And I'm pretty sure that him and Ben were on the right radio frequency, and they were talking to each other.
Yeah, 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 that's what.
And he told us that.
Where are you? Can't find you. Can't see you. Can't see anything.
Turn the lights on.
Turn the lights on.
Turn the lights on. They are on.
Oh, my gosh.
And so
Murphy again. Here goes Murphy.
Yeah, and it's like, so as usual, they was low on fuel,
starting to run out,
and he was running out of fuel.
Right,
he was on fumes.
Yeah,
And
isn't that where he saw there was one house out there, and it had a street light?
Yeah,
and that's all he could see.
He saw a house that had a street light, and he saw that there was a street there.
Yeah, he could barely. They were like
it was like a graded road.
Graded road, you know, hard surface graded road. Good, great places to land an airplane.
Oh yeah,
you know, man. And he could barely see the white graded road.
Yeah,
where the street light was. So he just slid on in there.
I'm sure he turned his landing lights on because he had to. To find the road, and so he turned the landing lights on, and he come in there, and probably close to that light, and according to him, and out of the whole frigging Everglades, the road department decided to park a road grader right there.
Bam! Hits a road grader. Knocks a wing off. Thank God there was no gas left in that plane.
Man. Yeah, that was a blessing. The one time a blessing that it was a curse, you know, to run out of fuel, be low on fuel, he had to land.
Yeah.
But thank God he was out of fuel because would have probably ignited.
Yeah,
it would have been a fireball.
Yeah.
Well, it happened to me one night too. We'll tell you about that story later on.
That's right. And
then the people in the house, didn't they call the cops?
They heard a boom, right? Yeah.
They heard the boom, so they called the cops.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cuba John and this young dude that was his co-pilot, when they hit, you know, they got out of the plane. First thing, you know, something like that happens, you want to get away from the evidence as quickly as
separate
possible.
Separate yourself from.
You got to separate.
Yeah.
And so.
They hit the swamp, right?
They hit the swamp
all over there.
I think they hit the swamp. Yeah. And more than likely, you know, if you think about it, Cuba John probably saw the people come out of the house and shine their light down there and see what was going on, and he knew that they were going to call the cops.
Yeah.
So he hit the swamp. Him and the little pilot, co-pilot,
where they've got alligators,
snakes, mosquitoes, spiders.
Oh my god! Yeah,
and it's pitch black dark right at that point too.
Yeah. Pitch black. Man.
Here they are, it's Belizean, black. no passports, and they are like,
and you know, no supplies, nothing,
no bug spray,
no bug spray, nothing,
no alligator spray,
mosquitoes draining them, and then here come the blue light,
then here comes the lights, here come the lights, man, you know, there are probably 15, 20 cops that had nothing else to do, come out there and, you know, swarm the place, and DEA and everybody else. And,
another one.
And
another plane full of pot
in
the heebie-jeebie area.
So, you know, Cuba John, he's out there, you know, probably 100 yards off, maybe 50 yards off, and kind of watching what's going on. All of a sudden, he said, it was kind of weird. He said, all the cops just left.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, just cleared out of
they
there.
They just cleared out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he said he was just sitting out there, and he thought, you know, well, maybe it's clear to go. He said about that time, one set of headlights come down there, and it was a pickup truck.
Yeah.
And some dude got out of it, and he was in civilian clothes, and he's like, okay, guys, come on out now. You guys can come out. It's clear.
Yeah.
Coast is clear.
Oh, no.
Sucking them into the trap.
Sucking them in. And and he said that this little kid that was with him, of course, they were both just, the mosquitoes were just draining them.
Oh, yeah, eating them alive.
Just
I'm
eating
sure.
them alive. I mean, there wasn't an inch that was, you know, that was bare that didn't have a mosquito bite on it.
Don't.
So the kid fell for it. The kid was about to run
kid
out.
The kid was in tears. He was crying.
Please let me go.
And he was trying to get away from Cuba John to turn himself in. He didn't care.
Yeah, anything would be better than this. The
and
swamp.
Cuba John had to tackle him and hold him down until the guy left. And then they sit out there in that jungle all night.
Then they walked out, and apparently they met up with Goofy Benny, got him on out. But there goes Murphy.
Yeah, they actually, I think they walked pretty good ways to a payphone.
Right, right. Yeah,
and then I got hold of Bermuda Ben, and
Bermuda Ben.
And he came and picked them up, but they lost another plane
and another load.
Well, I tell you, I've learned the lesson today. Listen to these stories. You got to stay away from Murphy. You got to stay away from the Everglades. And most of all, you got to stay away from Bermuda Ben.
That's right.
Don't do something with Bermuda Ben. Well, guys, we got more episodes coming up. We're trying to release stuff every 2 weeks, so y'all stay tuned for the next episode of the All-American Pot Smugglers.
Y'all come back.